ready to keep you company wherever you are. Carte Blanche, the podcast, brings you immersive, hard-hitting stories anytime, anywhere, every week.
Another week, another jam-packed installment of the Whole Week Wrap with Daily Maverick and Carte Blanche. Joining us this week is Daily Maverick business and personal finance journalist Nisa Moodley. Here's what's coming your way. Beware the lemon, a cautionary tale when it comes to buying a second-hand car. Then, another state-owned enterprise, this time to tackle our water woes.
We've had the energy crisis and we seem to be coming off the back end of that, although I think it's still quite some years away. I do believe that water resource management is definitely the next crisis on the horizon for South Africans.
Also, how exploding pagers and walkie-talkies could potentially pave the way for a new kind of warfare. Later, how the world's smelliest fruit is contributing to skyrocketing coffee prices. And the wheels of justice turn slowly, but at least they're turning. But first, just over 2 weeks into its existence, the two-pot retirement fund has already led to billions of rands making its way back into the economy. However, before you run off to cash your early pension check, keep in mind that it might just cost you more in the long run. Welcome back to the show, Nisa. It's always a pleasure having you with us. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I've got a bit of a flu, but otherwise, all good.
Sorry to hear that. I hope you feel better very soon. So on the 1st of September, the two-pot retirement fund went live across the country, and there was a lot of fanfare before it, and there was a lot of fanfare when it went live, and it enabled many South Africans to access a portion of their pension funds relatively early. Some of the figures that have come to light have been quite startling. By the 11th of September, SARS confirmed that it had received just over 160,000 applications relating to savings withdrawals, and that amounts to about a lump sum of 4 billion rands in payouts. So overall, a huge response from the public. Were you surprised at all by this two-pot frenzy?
No. I think because there's been such a long build-up to the two-pot system, and people have really been focusing on the fact that they will be able to withdraw. I think a lot of people have actually planned how will they use the money that becomes available. And in light of the cost of living crisis we're currently facing, Liz, it really doesn't surprise me that the amount of withdrawals have been as high as they have.
So am I correct in then saying that the economy will benefit from this in the long run?
Well, yes, because it means there's going to be more money coming into the economy in terms of consumer spending, and also hopefully debt levels will reduce. And I think there is a bright spot that a lot of people are neglecting because, yes, in the short to medium term, people are withdrawing from their retirement funds. But in the long term, the people that used to resign or leave jobs and change jobs and then cash out the entire pension, that's not going to be able to happen anymore, really, which means that there's a forced retirement savings. So in 20 years, I think we are going to see huge benefits.
Sadly, the two-pot pension system also exposed unfair labor practices, whereby companies have not been paying employee pension fund contributions as required. I know COGTA Minister Velinkosi Hlabisa stated last week that he specifically wants municipalities to be investigated after allegations of non-payment of pension contributions came to light. But I would think this same applies to many companies within the private sector as well. So in a way, looking at the positives of the two-pot system, this has also brought that conversation to the surface, which I think not a lot of people were talking about.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been writing about retirement funds for years, and I've always been aware, and there's always been sort of highlights around the fact that the security guard industry, specifically security companies, are notorious for not paying over withdrawals to pension funds. I think what's come to light, it's quite startling because it's uncovering the fact that actually this practice is so much more widespread than just one industry. And now it's completely all out in the open, which is great.
Now, for those considering, you know, withdrawing a portion of their retirement fund early, there are some serious tax implications that come with it. Could you talk us through that? Because it's essentially seen as a secondary income of sorts, isn't it?
Yes. So there's a few issues. Let's start with the income aspect. So if you withdraw a lump sum from your two-pot now this year, that money that you withdraw gets added to your taxable income for the entire year, which means you could get pushed into a higher tax bracket. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that you are taxed on that withdrawal at your marginal rate of tax. So if you're in the 35% tax bracket, you're getting taxed at 35%. So that tax gets taken off before the money goes into your account. If you owe SARS money, that will also get deducted before the money is paid over to you. And of course, your retirement fund administrator is going to take an administration fee to handle the withdrawal process. So once you take all of that into account, there's actually quite a lot of deductions that come off before you receive the money you apply for.
Following a much-needed interest rate cut and cooling inflation, more South Africans are once again looking at the possibility of owning a vehicle. However, times are still tough, pushing many potential buyers to opt for a second-hand vehicle instead. But buyer beware. Before you take ownership of that shiny set of wheels, make sure it's not a lemon. Now, keeping to consumer matters, and as expected, the South African Reserve Bank announced a 25 basis point interest rate cut. I think it's something many of us are celebrating. You know, every little bit helps. And of course, with the interest rate cut and lower inflation, which I discussed with one of your colleagues on the show not too long ago, comes the temptation to buy all kinds of nice things, you know, and for many South Africans, that would be a car. But you recently wrote a really important piece headlined "Beware the Lemon" on secondhand car sales and the many pitfalls buyers should look out for. Walk us through that process. What inspired this story? You had a really, really compelling case study that you mentioned. Her name was Emma. Tell us a bit more about this.
So yes, Emma was somebody who wrote into my Money Sense column. I've got a newsletter once a week, and she wrote in to say this was her experience when she bought a secondhand car. She bought it via a dealership, so she assumed everything was above board. And when she took ownership of the car, she did notice there was no service book in the cubbyhole. So she asked the salesman, and he said, oh, no, everything is digital now. He'll get it to her later. And then 5 days later, she ended up in a rural area late at night with her kids in the backseat, and the car just stopped dead. And she found out it's taken her, I think it's been about a year in the works, since she bought the car, but it had numerous complications. The alternator had to be replaced. The car was leaking oil. She took it for a service and found out that the engine block was cracked. There was a gasket blown. The dealership said it's not their problem. They've got nothing to do with it. And then she eventually had to hire a lawyer and go all the way up to the National Consumer Tribunal, where the dealership then offered her 16,000 Rand, even though her repairs had cost her 80,000 Rand. And she's racked up more than 300,000 rand, and she's still stuck paying for the car because the bank finance doesn't recognize the fact that the car actually doesn't work.
I know we receive countless submissions on a weekly basis from desperate motorists who landed up in a similar position. I mean, Emma's story for me sounded all too familiar, and I'm sure you've seen many similar submissions as well. So what advice do you have for those looking to buy a secondhand car? How do you ensure that you deal, number one, with a reputable dealer, but also what kind of questions do you need to ask? What do you need to look out for?
I think one of the first ports of call is if you dealing with a dealership, you should find out whether they are a member of the Retail Motor Industry Organization, the RMI, which if they are, that is a port of call where you can lay a complaint if something goes wrong. And then obviously, if you go for a test drive, you need to be quite aware of the car and how it handles during that test drive. It's not just about, am I comfortable in this car and does it look good? It's more about putting the radio off, listening to the engine sounds, paying attention to how the car handles on the road. When you inspect the car, make sure it's during the day in bright lights. so that you can look for bodywork damage or signs of repainting or spraying. If you go online, there's lots of tips about what to look out for really on that side. And then if you can get a mechanic, they offer a repair history and verification report, which tells you about how many repairs the car's been in for. And all of these things are available to you, and you have absolutely every right to ask for all these checks. And if the seller or the dealership is being a bit cagey about allowing you to do that, I think that should be a red flag right off the bat.
On the 18th of September, nations across the world celebrated World Water Monitoring Day. In South Africa, it once again highlighted the dire state of our water infrastructure and the threat posed by worsening levels of water pollution. According to Executive Manager of WaterCan, about 50,000 litres of sewage flow into our rivers and streams every second, while 40.8% of drinkable water is lost due to leaks. Now, as an increasing number of municipalities battle to keep the taps running, government is hoping a new state-owned enterprise in the form of the National Water Resources Infrastructure Agency can turn things around. Now, let's move our attention to water infrastructure, or the lack thereof, I think, in many municipalities. For many of our listeners, having no water for days on end is sadly a very real thing. I'm sure Daily Maverick, just like us, gets its fair share of desperate pleas from South Africans stuck with dry taps. And it's happening all over the country. Now, government is hoping a new state-owned enterprise can address our national water crisis. But I think we all view the term SOE as a bit of a swear word, really, in South Africa. So do you think another SOE is the solution to our water problems?
I think it could be. I think it depends very much on who is in charge of the SOE and what kind of oversight they're going to put in place for this so-called SOC, or state-owned company. We've had the energy crisis, and we seem to be coming off the back end of that, although I think it's still quite some years away. I do believe that water resource management is definitely the next crisis on the horizon for South Africans.
Absolutely. Because, you know, some concerning stats recently released by the Department of Water and Sanitation shows just how dire our water crisis is. It found that 46% of drinking water fails to meet microbiological standards. It also found that about 40.8% of water is lost due to leaks or simply unaccounted for, whatever that means. So government really hopes that with this new water SOE or SOC, that it will address these issues. But my question is that with the SOE mostly being managed by the Department of Water and Sanitation, if they failed getting the basics right up until now, how will the SOC ensure things are done more efficiently via this new setup? Because really, it's just putting another title on the same department that's been causing the problems from the beginning.
Exactly. And I think, Lizanne, I think one of the things that raises question marks in my mind, and I think is maybe something that should be scrutinized, is because Majodina, who is the woman that's been placed in charge of the new SOC, she says that one of the things that they're going to do is establish a National Water Resource Infrastructure Agency that will own all national water resource infrastructure assets and obtain revenue streams associated with those assets. And here's the kicker, which makes me very wary. She says, this will enable the agency to borrow additional funds on the strength of its balance sheet. And when you think about the level of borrowing that Eskom and Transnet have dug themselves into and the deep holes that the power and logistics sectors are facing, this kind of makes me think we're heading down the same road.
I think that's what a lot of the analysts also highlighted, is that how are you going to ensure the proper financial management of this entity? Because that's really where all our problems usually start whenever it comes to anything state-owned. Last week, several parts of Lebanon were rocked by back-to-back attacks on alleged members of Hezbollah. The well-coordinated attack saw pagers, walkie-talkies, and other devices explode almost simultaneously, leaving thousands injured and dozens dead. Fingers point to Israel as the nation behind the attack, and analysts are calling it a modern-day Trojan horse. So, what does this mean for the future of warfare?
Onto international news, and last week in Lebanon, we saw thousands injured and dozens killed in an attack believed to have been orchestrated by Israel. On Tuesday, thousands of wireless communication devices, or pagers for us 80s and 90s kids, exploded at the same time across various parts of Lebanon. And it's alleged that the targets were members of the Iran-backed armed group Hezbollah. Then on Wednesday, we saw walkie-talkies, solar equipment and other devices suddenly exploding as well, killing at least 20 people and injuring over 400. And this is quite a dramatic shift in the ongoing conflict between Israel and Hezbollah. How do you see this all unfolding? Because many experts have said this could potentially lead to a serious escalation.
Yes, I think it could definitely escalate things. And I think it's also very worrying because potential for conspiracy theories is quite rife. So it's going to be interesting to see how IT tech company is going to address this, because there's sources saying things like Israel's Mossad intelligence agency planted some of these explosives inside the devices. And they were ordered by Hezbollah months ago, or brought into the country, into Lebanon in spring. So it does raise questions around how well planned this whole thing was.
Definitely, because it does seem like it was really well planned for numerous months. Some analysts have called last week's mass explosions unprecedented, with a former CIA counterterrorism operative telling Vox, quote, "This is one hell of an op. It's probably the most impressive kinetic intelligence, that's basically tracking people, operation I've ever seen." And some have now said that these attacks mark the start of a dangerous new era of cyber warfare, where any device connected to the internet could now become a weapon. There are also others who have said that we'll now see militant groups come up with increasingly more creative ways to target enemies without actually even crossing borders. I remember Joshua Keating, who also looks at warfare and strategies, he said that few things spread faster than innovative ways to kill people in war. And I think that's really, at the end of the day, a truly sad reflection on human nature, really, and also how people are celebrating, because regardless of which side of the conversation you're on, people died at the end of the day. And I think when we get to a point where you start celebrating the death of people, you need to kind of do some introspection and question your own moral values in a way.
Absolutely.
Fantasy author Cassandra Clare once wrote, "As long as there's coffee in the world, how bad could things get?" We're sure many of you would agree that a hot cup of joe is central to daily existence. So, when we started noticing the ever-increasing cost of coffee, we couldn't help but feel a slight sense of panic. We ask, what's really driving up the price of this life-sustaining resource? Then, another win for taxpayers, as a former high-level member of the National Health Laboratory Service is held accountable for failing in her duties.
Now, every week when we record this show, I have my trusty cup of coffee next to me. Usually it's around my third cup of the day, and I just can't go through a day without it. I really, really need my coffee. But in recent months, and I'm sure many of our listeners and you have also noticed that the price of coffee has really skyrocketed. We have instant coffee, the average price of 250 grams rose to 67 rands, 37 cents. That's up from just over 50 rands a year ago. So what's the reason for this continuous spike? Because it just seems like it's not stopping.
I have to confess here, Lazan, I am actually an instant coffee drinker, much to my shame. But the principal cause is apparently a decline in the size of coffee harvests and underlying stocks in producing countries like Brazil and Vietnam, and even Indonesia. And all of this can actually be linked back to climate change, which is part of the reason for rising prices, because heavy rainfalls have meant that there's been an impact on yields. Prolonged periods of drought in Vietnam is lower harvest. And then heavy rainfall in Indonesia prevented pollination, which kind of just makes you step back and realize climate change is about a lot more than just lowering and raising temperatures.
And I also read a very interesting article. It was a BBC article, actually, that detailed how coffee farmers in Vietnam specifically, after suffering droughts and the rainfalls and all of these extreme climate situations, they then opted to grow durian to keep their farms going. You know, it's that very smelly fruit that's been banned from public transport in several countries. And interestingly, this now poses another problem because Vietnam now turned its attention away from coffee because it wasn't making them enough money anymore. They've now caused this 50% drop in coffee bean exports, specifically used for instant coffee. So that's another part of it, which it's bizarre. You don't really put those two together. So yeah, we have the world's smelliest fruit to blame for it as well, in part. But some experts are saying that they do see that coffee prices might stabilize in the coming months. I really hope so, because gosh, I really do love my coffee. I can't go without it.
Agreed, 100%, even if it is instant for some of us.
Yes. Now, let's wrap up today's show with a quick look at the National Health Laboratory Services. Just over a week ago, the Labour Court dismissed an unfair dismissal claim against the NHLS by former CEO Joyce Mokgale. She has now been ordered to pay back 22 million rands to the National Lab for losses it incurred due to her conduct. It says that it was due to financial mismanagement, dodgy decisions around the issuing of tenders, and so forth. With most things, everything takes many years before it reaches a conclusion. But I think it's always encouraging to see some positive movement in the fight against gross mismanagement at our state institutions.
Absolutely. Reading that article in Daily Maverick makes me want to clap my hands, because it's one of those instances where you can see that the wheels of justice, as slow as they might have been, have finally turned and somebody is actually being held liable for their action.
No, absolutely. We want to see more of that because it's in short supply in South Africa. So bring it on. Give us more accountability. But that's all we have time for this week. Thanks again for joining us, Nisa, and helping our listeners really navigate the often treacherous world of personal finance, because it can get quite overwhelming and confusing at times. So thank you very much for giving us some more clarity on that specifically today. And I hope you have a lovely week further.
And you too. Hopefully next time I won't have a frog in my throat.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Lizanne.
Thanks for listening. Catch us again next week for another Whole Week Wrap. Until then, why not join the conversation on Twitter, Facebook, and everywhere else? We always love hearing from you.